Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit SurreyFarms.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Carmen DeVito.
And I'm Alice Marcus Krieg.
And we are the ladies of Groundworks, Inc., who design, build, and maintain gardens all around New York. And this show aims to bring culture to horticulture. And today's show is all about the sensuality of the East.
Woohoo!
Doesn't that sound good? Sexy? And what better plant to represent that in our horticultural honor roll but plumeria, commonly called frangipani. Alice, will you introduce the horticultural honor roll this week?
I will. Horticultural honor roll music, please. Ship has come in. Okay, so Joseph Piton de Tournefort, a renowned French botanist and mentor to Charles Plumier, gave frangipani the scientific name of plumeria to honor French botanist Charles Plumier. The common name of the fragrant plant, frangipani, is after an Italian nobleman and perfumer, one who does perfume.
Yes.
Frangipani joins white oleander and periwinkle in the dogbane family of flowering plants. The plumeria genus itself represents only 8 flower species endemic to tropical America. Each cultivar possesses different growth habits and characteristics, and some are toxic. The flowers are ornate. They reach 2 to 3 inches in diameter, and they come in various shades of white, pink, red, yellow, and purple. This sun-worshipping plant enjoys rainforest-like habits and grows best in well-draining soil. Frangipani is not winter-hardy or cold-tolerant and survives a low temperature of 32 degrees Fahrenheit.
And I'm trying to grow it in Brooklyn.
Yes. Good luck with that. Forget about it.
We'll see. We'll see.
No, you can do it as long as you have enough sun.
And a greenhouse, perhaps.
Exactly.
So, so today is September 16th, and in thinking about, you know, our whole season and planning out the shows, Alice and I always try to have something that's a little bit timely, you know, or seasonal in some way. So I was thinking about, for some reason, I was thinking about the pilgrims. and on this day, September 16 in 1620, their English ship, the Mayflower, was 10 days into their journey across the Atlantic. They had left England.
So dysentery is just starting to set in.
Yeah, they're starting to hate each other by now. So they had left on September 6th.
How many have barfed? A lot. Oh.
How many wanted to strangle their children?
Exactly.
And so they left on September 6th, and they were, you know, they were well on their way, you know.
In the mighty Atlantic.
Yeah. And so, of course, we celebrate, you know, the results of that voyage all the time with our, you know, national holiday. But before the Europeans sailed west, they traveled east and into the past, to the Middle East, the Holy Land, with the intention of ridding what they considered their sacred cities of the Arab infidels. So last year, for Columbus Day, our friend Scott Appel shared with us some of the history of the Columbian Exchange, the exchange of plants and animals which occurred after Columbus, quote-unquote, discovered the New World. So today, we're enlisting the help of Scott once again, who is calling in from Vieques, Puerto Rico, to discuss just a few of the many plant species, as well as the scientific and cultural knowledge that were brought back to Europe as a result of the Crusades to the Holy Lands from the 11th to the 13th century.
And then which made their way you know,
eventually west
via that Mayflower journey,
exactly,
so to speak, to the Americas.
So, Scott, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you. I'm so happy to be here. Nice to hear your voices again.
Hi, Scott.
So if you haven't already, please take a peek at Scott in Arab costume.
That's right.
On our Facebook page. And let's see, I have a little test for you all, if anyone can translate the sign written in Arabic in the photo that's at Scott's feet. So for those of you who don't know Scott, he is the Green Man. He is a self-professed culinary horticulturist. Although he is a professional horticultural taxonomist, he is also a trained baker, chef, and culinary historian. He combines all these disciplines into one. He explains to his cooking and gardening students the history of the diverse herbs, fruits, and vegetables used in the kitchen or cultivated in both temperate and tropical gardens. He is the author of several books and innumerable articles. He lives, teaches, writes, cooks, and gardens with passion in Vieques. So, Scott, when we were talking about the show, we were talking about how Europe at the time of the Crusades was in the Dark Ages literally and culturally, right?
Well, yes. The fall of the Roman Empire happened in about the late 470s CE. That's the Common Era. And with the withdrawal of Roman influence in Northern Europe, meaning Germany, France, Britain, and further north, well, actually, ending in Britain, frankly, but with their withdrawal, Central Europe took major steps backward culturally. Reading and writing was no longer taught. People were illiterate. There was no secular music. The only music heard was in church. In mm-hmm. fact, the church ruled the countryside. Medicinal practices were practically non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
It was very, very backward. It was just amazing, and it lasted for centuries. But scientists believe that not only was it culturally backward, it was environmentally dark as well. Because they believe, some scientists believe, that a major volcano erupted somewhere in the globe. They can't pinpoint where. And the winds took so much ash over Europe that it literally cut down the sunlight and changed the temperature. So not only was it darker, literally, it was colder, it was also wetter.
Mm-hmm.
So vegetable crops formerly grown would no longer grow there. So all of a sudden, and of course this is not over moments, this is over time, their food had to change to be able to cultivate what they could.
Mm-hmm.
Cold crops, cabbage, mustard greens, barley, rye as grains. Really a tedious diet. But, of course, they had plenty of meat to eat. But centuries later, they began to, get themselves together, to put it really in a banal way. And that's the start of sort of the age, an enlightened era, with the age of chivalry and knights in armor and ladies in distress.
Right. But what was the impetus for the Crusades? Wasn't there an event, wasn't there a massacre of Christians by the Turks?
Right.
In Jerusalem? Wasn't that kind of like the sort of singular event that sort of pushed the Pope
and
galvanize people?
Well, yes, but of course, don't forget, there was no mail. It took forever
yes.
to disseminate the knowledge.
Right, right.
And yeah. and royalty and their entourage of soldiers, and women went as well, from Germany, France, England, all the way up to Sweden and Norway, went south
mm-hmm.
to get the infidel out of Jerusalem. Don't forget, to Muslims, Jerusalem is holy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because that's where Allah and enlightened Muhammad. To Christians, and at that time everyone was Catholic, don't forget, it's the holiest place on the planet.
Right.
Jerusalem is where Jesus was born, lived, and died.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So you see how it's already beginning way back then. Of course, it was holy to Jews. It was the Temple of David, rebuilt by Solomon.
Mm-hmm.
All three major religions had the same area in mind.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody went down to kick the Muslims out. And Europeans were very backward, in every social and cultural way than the Muslims, which were greatly advanced at that time. So they, meaning Europeans, were in for a really big deal, and they got it.
So let's talk about what they found, right?
Like, yes, yeah, there was a massive exchange.
It's such a huge list of plants that you guys had to kind of abbreviate.
We did.
In doing research for the show, you had to abbreviate.
Yeah, Scott and I kind of divided it into ornamental and economic plants. And the first ones, which appeal to me the most, of course, are the ornamental plants. As you were saying, the Muslims sort of introduced the Europeans to new taste and appreciation of like sensual and exotic plants,
decadence, right.
You know, fragrances, things that they had never heard of. Tell us about some of the plants that were brought over during the Crusades. Of an ornamental.
Well, let's take fragrance just as a header.
Right,
lilacs, Syringa vulgaris, lilacs are from the Middle East. Oleander, of course, that's not hardy, as you know.
Right.
Lilies, particularly the Madonna lily, roses, jasmine, tulips, daffodils, the spring bulbs, irises, both bulbous and rhizomatous kinds, primrose, which are fragrant.
Right.
All were, they've never been encountered.
Scott,
I'm sorry,
Scott. Do you remember years ago when you and I were working that fair, and we met the daylily guy from Turkey? When we were at the Horticultural Society, he was a daylily breeder from Turkey, and we befriended him, you and I, and he kept writing to us at the Hort Society, and he had.
Oh my gosh!
Do you remember him? And he had this like original collection of Turkish daylilies. Do you remember that guy?
Only vaguely. It's been so long, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was 15 years ago or something. But he kept wanting for us to be breeders with him, you know, in these Turkish daylilies. And we were like, as if the world isn't saturated with daylilies already.
Please, get us something more interesting, you know, like a rose variety, a rose species that hasn't been, you know, brought over. Well, the roses and the lilies are particularly interesting, too, because when Scott and I were speaking, these flowers, these floral emblems, really became important in Christian European art.
Mm-hmm. And the tapestries.
Yeah, Scott, talk about those tapestries a bit and what was represented there.
Well, first we have to look at the date. The tapestries are coming from late 1400s, 1480, 1495, early 1500s. That's right smack dab in the middle of the Renaissance.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, the Renaissance ends 1601 or so with the death of Elizabeth I. We're talking about 1110 to, you know, 12.
Right. We're talking about it.
1200.
Yeah.
So it's hundreds of years for these new plants to get infiltrated or disseminated into the culture.
Mm-hmm.
But being devout Catholics, they saw nuances in so many plants, and they portrayed them in religious tapestries and in their medieval art portraying Jesus and Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, the major one, is known as the Madonna lily. They found it in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And growing in rocks, not fabulous soil like we do today in our gardens, growing amongst rocks. They made their leaves, produced foliage in fall, which stayed green all winter long. To them, that was a miracle already. Then it produced the flower in June, Lilium candidum, the species, remember from our botany class, our Latin class.
Yes.
Virginally white, like Voltaire's Candide, virginally white. So they immediately embraced it, and being from Israel, they just said, this has to be Mary's flower, so to speak.
Right.
They put it, portrayed it wherever you see. If you go through the Museum of Metropolitan Art, through the ancient painting galleries, you'll see Madonna lily wherever you see the Virgin Mary portrayed.
Right.
Another great plant, and people will be planting this soon, is Fritillaria imperialis, the imperial fritillary.
Mm-hmm.
Discover that on their trip, on their crusades. Remember, they weren't really botanizing. They were going down to murder people.
Right.
But these plants got picked up regardless.
Along the way, right.
Right. But the myth or the fable surrounding it is, once upon a time, its bell-shaped clusters of flowers pointed up skyward, upward, like tulips. And, of course, it's a tulip cousin. Mm-hmm. But the day that Jesus was killed, the upright flowers nodded over and bent their heads. And they are notorious nectar producers. And nectar drips, literally, from the blossoms.
Right.
So they saw it as
Christ's
crying,
blood. Yeah.
Bent over and crying in, you know, devoutness to Jesus' death. Another plant, this is not ornamental, this is a weed, but I just have to slip this in here. We have a common weed up in the States. We don't have it down here. It's called plantain, not the banana, but plantain, the flat green leaves and the spiky little sticky up flower clusters.
Yes.
Well, it's from Europe and the Middle East. And you see many portraits of Jesus on his way to Gethsemane with the cross on his back, walking upon the road littered with these just wild plants.
Mm-hmm.
And the fable behind them is, when they were trodden upon by him, in deference to him, they forever laid their leaves flat against the ground. Mm-hmm. So you will see them portrayed, as I think I just mentioned, in their art.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at the tapestries, and we just happened to be looking at them, apropos no less, they have, when you look at the varying countries, there's Brussels, there's England. It's countryside scenes or forest scenes, and there's wildflowers. And there amidst the wildflowers and the trees, there's oaks, there's aspens. They have portrayed date palms and pomegranates. So they are taking these plants from the Middle East and plopping them into a European landscape.
Local scenes, right.
And if you think about it, of course, culturally, it would be just impossible.
Uh-huh.
But they're taking these, to them, fabulous, in the real sense of the word, meaning unbelievable, unknowable,
yes.
You know, off the top, out
right.
of the box.
Right.
And incorporating them into their religious art.
Right. Exotic. Right.
Because, you know, times were simpler. People were wowed. Well, we're so jaded in our own respect, it takes a lot to surprise us. But at that time, people were blown away by the flora they encountered.
Right. Right. Well, we have to take a break, Scott. Hang on one second. And when we get back, we'll talk about the economic plants that were found in the Crusades.
This one's called Just Because by the California Honey Drops on the Heritage Radio Network.org. Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards and Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit www.surreyfarms.com.
Well, welcome back to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. We're here with Scott Appel, botanical taxonomist, discussing the Crusades to the Holy Land by the Europeans and their effect on our culture, our science, and our palates. So, Scott, you were saying in the early part of the show that the Europeans' diet was rather bland and you know, monotonous after the Roman Empire fell. But it seems, you know, when we think of Europe, especially Southern Europe, that figs and olives and those things are synonymous with Southern Europe. Did Europe really lose all of that when Rome fell? They just stopped growing these Mediterranean plants entirely, do you think?
No, the Dark Ages were before the Crusades, so they weren't even encountered yet. But Crusaders brought cuttings and parts of these plants back with them. So when various edible plants came back to Europe, and the ones that could be grown further north, like almonds and peaches, mm-hmm. they caused a culinary sensation.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, if you lived in France or Sicily or Spain, you could grow, of course, olives and capers and bay and figs and dates and citrus, pomegranates. All these were unheard of. And, in fact, they play a great, some of them play a great role in Grecian mythology and even Roman mythology.
Yes.
But they encountered, you know, pinoles and pistachios. Mm-hmm. They brought back damask plums, Prunus domesticus, damask, meaning from Damascus, Syria, pears, medlars, which is an apple cousin, also in the tapestries. Very strange because you have to let it get nipped by frost and rot a little bit before it's edible. Yeah. They even encountered sugar cane, which was called the reed that made honey without the help of bees.
Oh.
They didn't cultivate it, though. They just kind of...
Well, they couldn't grow it,
no.
But they did encounter it.
Interesting.
But also, they encountered rosemary, thyme, basil, cinnamon, most of all, black pepper.
Right.
Yes.
Saffron.
Yeah.
Cloves, ginger, turmeric, nutmeg, mace, fenugreek, sesame seeds. I know I'm just rattling these off.
No, but these are things that the Romans and the Greeks did have.
Right.
That was lost, you know, for centuries. The Romans had all that in their diets, and the Greeks did too. But it was lost.
Listen to this recipe. I'm not quite sure how much time we have. This is for a roast that's spelled R-O-S-T-E in Old English.
Uh-huh.
It's a roast beef. But you have roast beef. Okay, that's cool. Then you have cinnamon, basil, rosemary, thyme, cut up dates, cut up dried figs, cut up dried apples, honey, almond milk, and baking powder. That would have been for tenderizing. But what a combination.
Yeah.
Of this to us about bizarre ingredients.
Have you made
because
that?
No. Well, you know, I used to do medieval cooking,
yeah.
And that's the last time I wore that outfit was for a lecture. but if you look at it and look at this recipe, okay, it's very strange. They went overboard with spices. It showed how much money you had to spend on them. It was all about wealth and showing off. It wasn't about flavor necessarily.
Well, wasn't it also about preserving or masking the meat, right?
No, that's a wives' tale,
really.
Okay. It wasn't about masking rotten meat, because you really couldn't mask that very well.
Right.
It was really about showing off your wealth.
Okay.
But in modern-day Eastern Europe, for the Ashkenazic Jews, you know, the Jews of Russia, the Ukraine, Poland, there's a meat dish called tzimis, and it's roasted beef with dates and raisins and honey and cinnamon. Now, doesn't that sound very familiar?
Mm-hmm.
So these recipes were embraced and spread all over Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So Ashkenazic Jews, even in America, are making tzimis for Rosh Hashanah and a millennium and two-thirds after, people are using it in the recipe I just read to you.
Right.
And even in the very Northern European, I mean, every time I go to IKEA and I see things with caraway and cinnamon and all those spices, they were all brought over from the Middle East and affected those cuisines that far north as well.
Right. And wouldn't this beg the question that then also gardens as an ideology and as a theory become cultivated with these materials, so to speak, so that the idea of a garden is
is Muslim.
Broadened.
Yeah. Right, is, I mean, that's also one of the things that they brought over, Scott, is the idea of a pleasure garden. Isn't that right? That's a Middle Eastern concept.
Yes. The ancient Romans garden for fun. Mm-hmm. Horticulturum versus agriculturum. Agriculture versus horticulture. Dark Ages, nobody gardened for fun. They just grew food, period.
Right.
But when they went to the Middle East, the Arabs had a far advanced landscape value. Mm-hmm. And being in such dry country, every garden had a myriad of water features, reflecting pools, basins, sinks, troughs, rills, channels, that kind of thing, in every garden, no matter how small, and beautifully landscaped with flowering and fragrant and fruiting plants. They were far advanced, as I mentioned. So these ideas were brought back. But, of course, at that time, bringing these plants back, it was the church that gardened. They had the disposable income to hire gardeners and prepare the soil. Everybody else was poor. It was a serfdom, if you know what I'm so they grew, the church, that is, the most famous old botanical gardens were formerly monasteries.
Mm-hmm.
They grew medicinal plants and eventually began to grow ornamental and also edible plants, and what they could.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, the greenhouse or stovehouse was nowhere near to even being thought of.
Right.
That was centuries later.
Right.
In fact, when I was in England last, and this was a while ago, I saw the oldest living fig tree in England.
Where's that?
It was centuries old, brought back from the Crusades in a monastery garden. It had been cut down by lightning, cut down by fire over the, you know, the ages.
Mm-hmm.
But it was huge. It was huge, right against the wall.
Where is
that,
Scott?
The wall. You know, I don't remember, to tell you the truth. I could look it up, but I wasn't prepared. I could have, but I did not.
Right.
I wasn't prepared to mention it.
That's so interesting.
Yes, it was amazing. It's like a piece of history.
Yeah, it was, literally. Yeah.
Well, we were laughing when you and I were speaking before the show, Scott, that, you know, yes, the idea of the garden, but also many, many other sciences were far well advanced in the Muslim world. Medicine, astronomy, right? All of that was much more advanced than it was in Europe.
Oh, everything was advanced. You know, their weaponry was so advanced, they were, Crusaders were defeated. That because weaponry was so, so far advanced. But astronomy, navigational skills, personal hygiene.
Yes.
The Crusaders learned how to bathe every day.
Right. Yes.
Imagine.
Yes.
Then they were taught about damasks and satins and silks and velvets and using perfumes and unguents. They were taught, of course, medicine. I think we just said that.
Yeah.
But
makeup, right? Makeup, beauty products were used in the Middle East much more so than in Europe at the time.
And even by men.
Yes.
And people wore perfumes on different parts of their body.
Mm-hmm.
So, Arabs must have been very fragrant, especially at dinner parties.
The roast was fragrant, the bodies were fragrant.
But chemistry and alchemists, the word alchemy is an Arabic word.
Mm-hmm.
Even vintning, the word alcohol, it's an Arabic word. So even the language, Arabic language, has infiltrated English for everyday words.
Mm-hmm.
Like paradise, right? The word paradise is a Islamic word, isn't it?
Yeah, and they brought all of these sciences back north. So really, they went down to annihilate the Arab population and But in fact, and of course they did not, and they're still working on it, they came back heavily or much more educated. And in fact, on March 12, 2000, Pope John Paul II apologized for the Crusades and all of the its Christian cruelties, because it was really to annihilate an entire population.
Right.
For a religious
purpose.
End.
Right.
Wow, that's impressive. The church doesn't apologize very often.
No,
I want to look that up.
It made headlines. Believe me.
I want to look that up. I don't remember that. So, well, Scott, I'm afraid we've reached the end of our road, our crusade road. Our 30 minutes is up. But thank you so much. You've enlightened us, as usual, and shared your knowledge of plants and language and history. And
I'm ready to throw my chainmail out and join you down south.
Yeah. I could listen to you and talk to you forever and eat your delicious food. So I think it's time that I make a trip to
Vieques. And we actually brought some figs from my parents' garden today into the studio.
Yeah,
Scott.
We have figs and yogurt, actually.
Yes.
Almonds that we're snacking on.
Yes, I'm wearing a tunic-like outfit. I have jasmine perfume. All thanks to the Crusaders.
Yes.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for going.
Thank you. Yes, yes. And thank you, my dear friends, for having me on your show, as always.
Yeah, Scott, look up that Daylily guy. I remember we laughed very, very hard, and he kept wanting to have a show, and he wanted us to propagate these boring Daylilies that were from Turkey. So we have to find that guy again.
Well, thanks again, Scott.
Well, and you're more than welcome. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye. Thank you.
Our show is produced by Jack Inslee and engineered by Joe G. I just want to remind everybody listening that Heritage is a non-profit radio station. So
we need some
money.
We
need
support.
Please join us. Go to the page. Become a member and support the programming that you love. An archive of our show is available at heritageradionetwork.org. And We Dig Plants, and anytime on iTunes, please join our Facebook fan page, Groundworks Inc. We Dig Plants.
And you'll get a free prize every
week. Yes, check in tomorrow. You're going to find out who won the book. Okay, thanks for listening. See you in the garden.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.